I think I have an answer to that, a succinct one. I also want to associate myself with Jan's observations with respect to what happens now in Iraq, the best possible solution. But I want to finish on a very different note. And I want to finish because I think it's important for you all to know that those of you who share my sense of outrage, my tone, I think, does not betray the deep sense of the English word outrage, just not do it. The Germans have a word, entsetzt. That comes closer, but still doesn't do it. Outrage at what? Outrage at the perversion or subversion of our Constitution? Outrage at the prostitution of the process of intelligence analysis? And outrage at where we are in Iraq, with thousands and thousands being killed, just as Catherine Gunn predicted before the war, by the way, before the war. So what do we do when this anger seems to linger and linger and doesn't go away? Well, I think we need to remind ourselves that anger is a virtue. My authority on that is none other than Thomas Aquinas, 700 years ago. He bemoaned the fact that there was no word in Latin for the virtue of anger. You see, he brought the Pythagorean idea that virtue is in the middle, so just enough is the virtue. So take courage, for example. Too much foolhardiness, no good. Too little timidity, that's no good either. And he said there's no word for the virtue of anger. And he quoted John Chrysostom of the early church, and he said, he or she who is not angry when there is cause for anger sins. Why? Because anger looks to the good of justice, and if you can live amid injustice without anger, you are unjust. And he added one thought, which I think is altogether relevant here. Thomas Aquinas, 700 years ago, spoke manfully against what he called unreasoned patience. He said, unreasoned patience nourishes negligence and encourages not only evil people, but good people to do evil. And so my appeal to us all is to avoid unreasoned patience, to look into these matters very closely, to see what the seeds of this war really were, and the key word is oil, to look at places like Australia, where exactly what happened with Frank happened, where the Andrew Wilkie, the senior analyst in the Australian service, he and his colleagues served up their appreciation, similar to the Danish intelligence service, and they served up the prime minister, the foreign minister, and the defense minister, and all three of those said they never got the word that there were no weapons of mass destruction there or ties with Al Qaeda. Sound familiar, Frank? Sounds very familiar. So I think we have to be honest. I think we have to spread a little truth around. We have to realize what the real reasons for this war were. OIL, both as a word, as an acronym, and I'll come back to that in whatever questions there may be. Thank you very much.
There will be a question from each of the journalists, and I ask you to answer them after you have both questions.
Okay, fine.
Of course, I will have to try to turn your arguments upside down, since
sure.
That's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about uncertainty. If you read Hans Blix's book, you find out that actually even he believed that Iraq had some weapons of mass destruction until very late in the process.
Mm-hmm.
What if the intelligence services were not sure, if the intelligence was uncertain and you couldn't conclude anything? How should politicians react upon that? Let me give you a parallel. The climate issue, that's also a very uncertain issue. But here we argue that we should use the precautionary principle and act before it's too late. And that argument has actually been used by our own foreign minister. He said he has been arguing that the uncertainty and the possibility that Iraq might have weapons of mass destruction was enough to say that politicians could not avoid, they would have to act, they would be obliged to act upon that. Mm-hmm. What's your answer to that, please?
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a completely different question, because I think, as you have showed, it was very clear that anyone who wanted to know could know that Iraq was no danger, with no navy, no air force, no missiles, no way of delivering whatever they might have kept, a very old biological or chemical materials. It was no threat. But there was one question also that I don't think was asked. That was the question of, why would Saddam Hussein attack? What would be his motive to attack? He's not a terrorist, he's a leader of state. Why should he attack the USA or the West or anyone? Why was this question not raised among politicians in the States and in the agencies? Because I don't, maybe it was, but I didn't see
I didn't hear the last word. In the press and where else?
No, I mean, I don't think this question was raised.
Right. Okay. Good.
In general.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Two excellent questions. Questions are really, I'm treasuring because they're right to the point. Let me address the first one. Already, I think Hans mentioned the Rumsfeld theorem. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Okay. Now, I suppose you had to go to Princeton to learn that. But that is one hell of a basis to start a war. Okay? Does everyone know here what the subjunctive mood is in English? Well, it's the conditional mood. And you don't start a war in the conditional or the subjunctive mood. The answer was continued inspections. There was no one who thought, who really reflected on this, that thought that Iraq was an immediate threat. The threat was overblown, we could see it, and the real nub of the issue had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction. And so I would just simply say that we veteran intelligence professionals for sanity pored over this issue in early 1990, well, from 1992 to 1993. I wanted to say the evidence is pretty clear that there aren't any weapons of mass destruction. My colleague said, look, Ray, there's got to be some lingering around, okay? So let's not go out on a limb here. And so what we did say, and this I think is the only thing that's significant, there are certainly not weapons of mass destruction in the amount and the power that would justify an attack on Iraq. That was very, very clear all along. If there were some lingering around, and it was hard, you know, I have to really confess here, we had a postmortem. Why were we not able to say there were none at all? We were not able to say that because the President of the United States, the Secretary of State, Vice President, Secretary of Defense, told us in no uncertain terms that it was beyond dispute. They had indisputable proof that there was. Now, we're in the intelligence business. We know that there are certain things that can't be revealed, and we're saying, well, you know, maybe we ought to give them the benefit of the doubt, you know? And in that, we failed as intelligence officers, because if it was any other country, we would have said they're lying through their teeth. But we're Americans, okay? We have hearts, and we had a certain pride of our country. And so we were misled just like everyone else. So we didn't rule it out, but we did say very early on there were certainly not weapons in the mass that would justify an attack. Now, with respect to, I can't read my writing here. We're talking about, well, why would Iraq attack the United States? Well, let's rule that right off. Iraq couldn't attack the United States. It was years and years away from any nuclear weapons. The business about giving nuclear or weapons of mass destruction to terrorists, the CIA had a very firm position on that. They said that Saddam Hussein would only give weapons to terrorists that are outside of his control if his back was against the wall. In other words, if the West invaded his country, that was the only reason that he would do that. Now, he wouldn't attack the U.S. because he couldn't. And all this business about drone planes and stuff off our coast, that was ridiculous. But there is one aspect here that has not been really given adequate weight today, and I'm going to do it here in the minute that I have left. I said oil, and I said as an acronym, and I mean oil, O for oil, I for Israel, and L for logistics. This is the concept. This is the neocon concept. You can read it on Project for a New American Century on the web. The Australians were wise to it. It befuddles me why your government was not able to see that this was not about weapons of mass destruction or ties with Al-Qaeda. It was about this vision that people ruling our country have now, that we are the sole remaining superpower. We need to predominate in key regions of the world. We're running out of oil. We want to ensure our oil supply. Number two, Saddam Hussein couldn't attack the United States, but he could attack Israel. Now, Colin Powell told us on the 5th of February, 2003, that Saddam Hussein had 24 Scud missiles. It turns out he was off by 24. But we weren't sure. And all it would take was one Scud missile with a chemical warhead, raining on Tel Aviv, to really destroy that, or to pose a credible deterrent. Suppose Saddam Hussein got up and said, look, you know, I really feel strongly about my Arab brothers and sisters, and I really don't like you driving your bulldozers over Palestinian homes and raiding Jenin with tanks. And so you better stop, because I've got a little scud here, and I just might use it. This is the nightmare of the Israeli government, and it was removed, because they got the neocons in our government who have real difficulty distinguishing between the strategic interests of Israel and the strategic interests of the American people. And that is a major factor in this war. And the L from oil has to do with the logistics base, the military bases that are needed if you're going to predominate in that part of the world. So oil, OIL, is the answer to the question, and not WMD or supposed ties with Al-Qaeda. Thank you very much.
Three questions.
Question for Ray McGovern.
Be brief, please.
I'll try.
Also in the answers.
Yep. Last month, and again a few days ago, the Iranian news agency carried an item report citing an alleged insider in the CPA as saying that suspicious consignments of things were arriving late at night, and this alleged insider was speculating that it could be an attempt to reconstitute the missing weapons of mass destruction. Would you dismiss this out of hand as just anti-American Iranian propaganda?
Please answer after the questions, after all three questions.
Oh, okay.
I'm Fredrik Heffemel from Oslo, and I'm very glad to be here at this very fine seminar conference. A lot of the comments on the issue, they seem to presuppose that the war would have been legitimate if there had been weapons of mass destruction, and so much of the comments are based on that, but it's of course wrong under the UN Charter, which only the Security Council can, and so on, and all other possibilities shall be exhausted before you go to war and all that. And then there is one thing about Colin Powell's statement and Condoleezza Rice's statement about nuclear weapons or mass destruction weapons of Saddam. And they, at that point, they had knowledge of nuclear weapons. but not in Iraq, but in Israel. And that shows an enormous double moral standard. And the reason why they knew was that a pioneer whistleblower in this fine company should be mentioned. This is Mordecai Vanunu, who 18 years ago gave information on the Israeli nuclear weapons. And he has spent 17 and a half years in jail, in a cell which is the opening of that door, 6 square meters without daylight.
Wow.
And you should believe that now, on April 21, I'm on my way to Ashkelon prison to see him. He would be free. He has served his sentence. But the Israeli intelligence services are imposing strict limitations on his freedom. He will be placed in house arrest in a small town, have to report any movement out of this area. He cannot go nearer to Israel's border or the occupied territories than 300 meters, not nearer than 100 meters within an embassy. And 100 people from all over the world are going there to meet him. He will not be permitted to speak with foreigners, not permitted to talk on the phone or send faxes or have mail with foreigners. It is absolutely outrageous. So.
I had a question myself.
Okay.
My name is Tom Clark. It's for Ray McGovern. Ray, you've talked about how intelligence was misused in the United States. And some of us have heard of similar circumstances in England, the Rockingham cell, where intelligence was filtered out so that the politicians heard what they needed to hear to justify war. We've seen how intelligence has been ignored here in Denmark, and that's something that one could call a crisis of democracy, to borrow a term used by the Trilateral Commission back in the 70s. They were talking about something completely different. But can you conceive of anything, maybe a mechanism one could build into the governments to prevent that sort of thing? Or is the answer just voting new politicians in that one can trust? That's pretty much my question. I mean, what can one do to prevent that sort of thing?
Well, obviously, trustworthy politicians would go a long way. But I'm fond of quoting the theologian, popular theologian, Annie Dillard, and she finishes up by saying, in the final analysis, there is only us. There never has been any other. And this assembly here gives me great hope and great joy that people are concerned enough to spend this many hours going over the important issues and trying to figure out how to make them better. So that's how I'd answer that. Now, should I attempt the other ones, and very briefly? On the notion of planting weapons of mass destruction, some of you who know, who have read the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity issuances, and there are 11 of them now, I have a list with me here if somebody's interested, know that I think number 4 or 5 raised the specter, and raised it as probably not more than 50% likely, but almost likely, and I've been saying all along that it's a 50-50 proposition. When I first started saying that, I began to look in the mirror and say, Ray, have you become paranoid? This is pretty far-fetched. And yet, as I've watched the neocons, so-called, and I object to neoconservative. I am a conservative. These neocons are not neoconservatives. They are neo-fascists. In a word, watching what they have done, and also being aware that if they are voted out of office in November, they could be liable to criminal charges and jail time, with no one to pardon them, at least not immediately. Watching all that, I do not put anything past them. I do not put anything past them. And if they thought that it might affect the election by shipping some weapons of mass destruction, so-called, and then all of a sudden finding them in Iraq, that would be, I don't think it's probable, but I wouldn't rule it out. And it pains me greatly to say that kind of thing about my own country. As far as Vanunu and Israel, you know, this is really an important issue. I have been condemned by the Rabbi Council of the Greater Miami Area as an anti-Semite simply because I said the kinds of things in an article that I just said up there at the podium. Anyone in our country who speaks out and says that this war has as much to do with Israeli objectives as it had with American perceived objectives is immediately vilified and called anti-Jewish, anti-Israeli. I grew up in New York. I grew up with all kinds of Jewish people, and I love them dearly. My father has an honorary degree from Yeshiva University. We know what the Jewish people are like. This is not the Jewish people. This is the Israeli government. And when you're talking about violating Security Council resolutions of the UN, well, if there were 16 violated by Iraq, how many were violated by Israel? How many? 16 times 16. And so this needs to be borne in mind. And then when we talk about, well, Syria might be working on nuclear weapons, and the Syrian foreign minister says, well, we'll stop. We think there should be a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East. But that, of course, will include Israel. All of a sudden, Washington is no longer interested. So the point made earlier that it is the existence of nuclear weapons, not the proliferation of them. If we're to be above hypocrisy, if we're going to be credible at all, we need to address the existence of these weapons in our own hands, in Israelis' hands, as well as the question of giving them on to others.
Three questions.
Question for Ray McGovern.
Be brief, please.
I'll try.
Also in the answers.
Yep. Last month, and again a few days ago, the Iranian news agency carried an item report citing an alleged insider in the CPA as saying that suspicious consignments of things were arriving late at night, and this alleged insider was speculating that it could be an attempt to reconstitute the missing weapons of mass destruction. Would you dismiss this out of hand as just anti-American Iranian propaganda?
Please answer after the questions, after all three questions.
Oh, okay.
I'm Fredrik Heffemel from Oslo, and I'm very glad to be here at this very fine seminar conference. McGovern, a lot of the comments on the issue, they seem to presuppose that the war would have been legitimate if there had been weapons of mass destruction, and so much of the comments are based on that, but it's of course wrong under the UN Charter, which only the Security Council can, and so on, and all other possibilities shall be exhausted before you go to war and all that. And there is one thing about Colin Powell's statement and Condoleezza Rice's statement about nuclear weapons or mass destruction weapons of Saddam. They, at that point, they had knowledge of nuclear weapons, but not in Iraq, but in Israel. And that shows an enormous double moral standard, and the reason why they knew was that a pioneer whistleblower in this fine company should be mentioned. This is Mordecai Vanunu, who 18 years ago gave information on the Israeli nuclear weapons, and he has spent 17 and a half years in jail in a cell which is the opening of that door, 6 square meters without daylight.
Wow.
And you should believe that now, on April 21, I'm on my way to Ashkelon prison to see him. He would be free. He has served his sentence.
but the Israeli intelligence services are imposing strict limitations on his freedom. He will be placed in house arrest in a small town, have to report any movement out of this area. He cannot go nearer to Israel's border or the occupied territories than 300 meters, not nearer than 100 meters within an embassy. And 100 people from all over the world are going there to meet him. He will not be permitted to speak with foreigners, not permitted to talk on the phone or send faxes or have mail with foreigners. It is absolutely outrageous. So.
I had a question myself. My name is Tom Clark. It's for Ray McGovern. Ray, you've talked about how intelligence was misused in the United States. And some of us have heard of similar circumstances in England, the Rockingham cell, where intelligence was filtered out so that the politicians heard what they needed to hear to justify war. We've seen how intelligence has been ignored here in Denmark, and that's something that one could call a crisis of democracy, to borrow a term used by the Trilateral Commission back in the 70s. They were talking about something completely different. But can you conceive of anything, maybe a mechanism one could build into the governments to prevent that sort of thing? Or is the answer just voting new politicians in that one can trust? That's pretty much my question. I mean, what can one do to prevent that sort of thing?
Well, obviously, trustworthy politicians would go a long way. But I'm fond of quoting the theologian, popular theologian, Annie Dillard, and she finishes up by saying, in the final analysis, there is only us. There never has been any other. And this assembly here gives me great hope and great joy that people are concerned enough to spend this many hours going over the important issues and trying to figure out how to make them better. So that's how I'd answer that. Now, should I attempt the other ones, and very briefly? On the notion of planting weapons of mass destruction, some of you who know, who have read the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity issuances, and there are 11 of them now, I have a list with me here if somebody's interested, know that I think number 4 or 5 raised the specter, and raised it as probably not more than 50% likely, but almost, you know, almost likely. And I've been saying all along that it's a 50-50 proposition. When I first started saying that, I began to look in the mirror and say, Ray, have you become paranoid? This is pretty far-fetched. And yet, as I've watched the neocons, so-called, and I object to neoconservative. I am a conservative. These neocons are not neoconservatives. They are neo-fascists. In a word, watching what they have done, and also being aware that if they are voted out of office in November, they could be liable to criminal charges and jail time, with no one to pardon them, at least not immediately. Watching all that, I do not put anything past them. I do not put anything past them. And if they thought that it might affect the election by shipping some weapons of mass destruction, so-called, and then all of a sudden finding them in Iraq, that would be, I don't think it's probable, but I wouldn't rule it out. And it pains me greatly to say that kind of thing about my own country. As far as Vanunu and Israel, you know, this is really an important issue. I have been condemned by the Rabbi Council of the Greater Miami Area as an anti-Semite simply because I said the kinds of things in an article that I just said up there at the podium. Anyone in our country who speaks out and says that this war has as much to do with Israeli objectives as it had with American perceived objectives is immediately vilified and called anti-Jewish, anti-Israeli. I grew up in New York. I grew up with all kinds of Jewish people, and I love them dearly. My father has an honorary degree from Yeshiva University. We know what the Jewish people are like. This is not the Jewish people. This is the Israeli government. And we're talking about violating Security Council resolutions of the UN. Well, if there were 16 violated by Iraq, how many were violated by Israel? How many? 16 times 16. And so this needs to be borne in mind. And then when we talk about, well, Syria might be working on nuclear weapons, and the Syrian foreign minister says, well, we'll stop. We think there should be a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East. But that, of course, will include Israel. All of a sudden, Washington is no longer interested. So the point made earlier that it is the existence of nuclear weapons, not the proliferation of them. If we're to be above hypocrisy, if we're going to be credible at all, we need to address the existence of these weapons in our own hands, in Israelis' hands, as well as the question of giving them on to others.
Now I have to say that for the sake of our afternoon program, I will be very brutal. I will cut down our lunch break to 40 minutes only. And I cannot recommend anybody to leave the building, because the nearest place you can find is Heubroplatz. That's too far away. So remain in the building, and as far as I remember, there's a shop on the right side for small things to be eaten and drink.